And a good Monday morning to you. Welcome into the Nick Craig Show, streaming live on YouTube, Rumble, and X. So don't forget that you can take the show with you 24/7 in your favorite podcast app. Just search for the Nick Craig Show wherever you get your shows, whether that be Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, and take it with you on demand on your own time. Hopefully you had a nice weekend, a pretty nice one across southeastern North Carolina. You can also text in this morning at 910-377-6425. That's 910-377-6425. And get your comments in on the live program this morning. Well, mentioning the weather, things are not going to be great across, at least in the later afternoon, across southeastern North Carolina today. We do have a pretty substantial risk of some severe weather. Looking at the latest details out of the Storm Prediction Center, they're based out of Norman, Oklahoma. The Cape Fear region is split under both a slight and enhanced risk of severe storms. The timeline, there's actually a little bit of rain moving through the area right now. Looking at radar right now, some rain showers moving through the northern half of New Hanover, the southern and eastern halves of Pender County right now. And we will have some strong showers and storms that move through later today. You can see this line as it stands right now, currently on the Mississippi-Alabama border. These showers and storms will progress east throughout the day today, and then will progress into our region through the late afternoon and evening hours. Maybe a double shot, might get some rain in the midday, but then the higher risk of some severe storms will be in the latter half of the afternoon and evening hours. We do have a 5% tornado risk and the chance of some hail and some wind damage as well. So be advised if you've got plans going on this afternoon and evening. We could be dealing with some pretty nasty weather across the region. It is the final day of March, heading deeper into spring, and it is unfortunately that time of year. So just be advised if you've got anything going on in the afternoon and evening hours today. Well, the big news, or a couple of big stories over the weekend, taking us to Washington, D.C., a direct quote from the president. He is, quote, pissed off with Vladimir Putin over lack of peace progress, according to a report. And this is being reported all across the world this morning. President Trump, not mincing any words, he's pissed off at Russian President Vladimir Putin for lashing out at President Volodymyr Zelensky of Ukraine over the weekend. Trump told that to NBC News in an interview yesterday. Trump told NBC that he was, quote, frustrated with Putin for not moving forward in the right direction towards a peace agreement with Ukraine. Putin disparaged Zelensky's leadership on Friday, arguing that a transnational government may be necessary for Ukraine, indicating that Zelensky is not an elected leader or should not be an elected leader, and that essentially Ukraine should not have its own sovereign government, and that some transnational group needs to move in and govern over Ukraine. Trump told the outlet, quote, if Russia and I are unable to make a deal on stopping the bloodshed in Ukraine, and if I think it was Russia's fault, which it might not be, but if I think it was Russia's fault, I'm going to put secondary tariffs on oil, on all of the oil coming out of Russia. That would be if you buy oil from Russia, you can't do business in the United States. There will be a 25% tariff on all oil, a 25 to 50% tariff. Trump nevertheless clarified that his anger will, quote, dissipate quickly if Putin does the right thing. Now, of course, last week, two weeks ago, Trump and Putin did speak, and there was apparently all accounts, everything from that conversation was that things went, for the most part, pretty well. That the discussion there, we mentioned last week that there was an agreement on a military ceasefire in the Black Sea. So that was progressing forward, and it seemed like things were moving in the right direction, which is really all you can ask for, right? I mean, you've had this war now brewing for years under the previous administrations, under previous world leadership, right? You hear all of this glad-handing from folks over in Europe about how they're going to step in and stop this war, yet all of them were completely MIA for the last 4 years while this thing was going on. Trump is now in the Oval Office. He is meeting with both parties. He's actually talking. I know this is going to come off as a shocking shocking thing for you. Trump is actually talking to both parties, which is something that Biden was just unwilling to do so. And it did seem like things were progressing in the right way. And hopefully they still are. Maybe this is some, I don't even know what you describe, some misunderstanding. It seems pretty clear. Maybe these words aren't followed up by actions. But I mean, you look at this situation with Vladimir Putin. Why would he not want a peace agreement at this point? He's not going to win. His army has been battered and destroyed in the very eastern portions of Ukraine. The bloodshed is remarkable. The support of this war from the Russian people is at all-time lows. What the hell is he thinking? He's got an out here. Now, I'm sure if anything, it's his pride that is going to take the biggest bruise in all of this. He doesn't want to admit that the mighty Mother Russia was unsuccessful in what should have been, if you're looking at it from a pure strategic, pure military standpoint, Russia should have steamrolled through Ukraine in like 2 weeks. If you're looking at it from manpower, from resources, from military muster, this Russia should have, if they were truly wanting to, could have easily rolled through Ukraine in the matter of just a couple of weeks. Yet that didn't happen at all. You had the incursion in the eastern half of Ukraine, and there's been a lot of standstill essentially since then. Battle lines, yes, have moved a little bit back and forth, but it's largely been stagnant for quite some time. And I'm sure it's Vladimir Putin's pride that is getting in the way right now, that he does not want to accept defeat, which is what a peace agreement will be. That does not ebb well with the image of Mother Russia and the strong Russian military and everything that he has worked on concocting over the last couple of decades that he's been in leadership in Russia. So that's probably the biggest sticking point as of right now. And the fact that now Trump is coming out saying he's pissed at Putin, and rightfully so, because Trump is trying to get this thing over with. He understands that this is not sustainable for either party. It sure as hell isn't sustainable for the United States, who has invested hundreds of billions of dollars into a never-ending, lines-not-moving war that's taking place between Ukraine and Russia. Trump is trying to end this thing. Trump is trying to get both parties to the table and get some sort of conclusion. Seemed like things were trending in the right direction, at least from the Russian side. That might be on halt right now. And what exactly Putin does here going forward is going to be very interesting, because I'm not really sure what his game plan is at this point. I'm not sure that anybody knows what his game plan is. But these ceasefire discussions have begun taking place. Russia has been, fighting this war with no substantial progress for years. What's the holdup? That's the only that's why I'm saying it seems like it's a pride issue now more than anything else. Russia's not winning. Russia's not taking over Ukraine like they'd want. So what's the game plan? Is there going to be some big sort of recalculation on the Russian front? No, it's not going to happen. Their military is battered, beaten, and completely out on their luck. The Russian military, the young men who have gone to the front lines of this to be slaughtered month after month, year after year, the morale is atrocious. Putin's done at this point. There's no sensible way forward for him to, quote-unquote, win, and I throw that in air quotes, this war. His only solution, his only path forward is a peace agreement, is a ceasefire, is some sort of treaty ending this war. And I can promise you this, he does not want to get Donald Trump on his bad side. The last thing Vladimir Putin needs right now is to have Trump, quote, pissed off at him. If he really wants to get and come to a conclusion with all of this, pissing off Trump is not the solution to it. He should take a page out of Zelensky's book from back about a month ago at this point, when he came to the United States, had that disastrous sit down in the Oval Office with Vance and Trump. You don't want to have Trump on your bad side of this. I want peace. I think the vast majority of the American people want this to be done with. And I think that you can probably say the same for the vast majority of the people in Russia and the vast majority of the people in Ukraine. Right? They want this behind them. They want to move on. They want to get back to some semblance of a normal life. And Putin acting in this manner, calling essentially Zelensky's administration fraudulent and saying some other government needs to come in and operate the country is just stupid. I mean, completely stupid. So now Trump is pissed off at Zelensky, and we'll see where that goes. Threatening tariffs on Russian oil. Trump said this, quote, "I feel like if we're in the midst of negotiations, you could say that I was very angry and pissed off when Putin said that yesterday. You know, when Putin started getting into Zelensky's credibility, because that's not going in the right direction. Do you understand?" That was in a phone interview with Kristen Welker yesterday or on Sunday. And Trump's spot on there. We're trying to de-escalate this situation, right? We're trying to bring both parties to the table and get some sort of concessions here. Putin is screwing this up for whatever freaking reason, and now Trump's all pissed off at him. Which, you know, I'll just kind of mention this in passing, by the way. This doesn't really add up with the whole Trump's a Russian puppet thing, right? You know, that the left continues to promote day in and day out. If Trump is Vladimir Putin and Russia's puppet, why would he be pissed off at what Putin is saying and threatening more sanctions on Russian oil? You guys see how your nonsensical narratives fall apart pretty quickly when the rubber meets the road? Like when you've got a guy like Trump who is actually trying to negotiate some sort of peace agreement? When you've got a president that's actually trying to get everybody to the table and find out how we end this thing? Your really weak, stupid nonsense, it falls apart very, very rapidly. And so you're seeing that take place right now. Trump very angry and, quote, pissed off at Vladimir Putin in Russia this morning. So that is the detail we're tracking there. On the other side of the equation, we've got Trump also apparently ticked off with Zelensky because now he's trying to back out of this mineral rights agreement. This was a press gaggle that took place yesterday evening. Trump aboard Air Force One talking to media. Let's take a listen to this.
Zelensky, by the way, I see he's trying to back out of the rare earth deal. And if he does that, he's got some problems. Big, big problems. We made a deal on rare earth. And now he's saying, well, you know, I want to renegotiate the deal. He wants to be a member of NATO. Well, he was never going to be a member of NATO. He understands that. So if he's looking to renegotiate the deal, he's got big problems.
So both sides of this seemingly screwing the pooch in one form or another. Zelensky once again trying to go back and try and change the ground rules of the discussion that has taken place between the United States as well as the Ukrainian government, who, by the way, signed off on the mineral rights agreement. The whole reason that Zelensky was here in the United States, what was it, like 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, whatever it was, you had the administration in Ukraine sign off on this mineral rights agreement, which would give the United States a vested interest in the success of Ukraine going forward. It would give the United States a reason to have not necessarily individuals on the ground. I don't think that's a good idea at all, and I don't know that that's what's being alluded to, but it would give the United States a vested interest in Ukraine's recovery, taking over some percentage of mineral rights in Ukraine. You know, Zelensky's talking about, well, what's going to stop Russia from just doing this again? Well, having U.S. and having a vested interest in your country would be one of those reasons. But now Zelensky apparently is trying to walk back on that deal. So, yeah, it really begs the question, if the United States is the one trying to bring everybody together, if the United States is the one that's leading this charge, bringing Russia to the table, bringing Ukraine to the table, getting the mineral rights deal with Ukraine, getting Russia to agree to beginnings of a ceasefire, why are both of these parties feeling the need to screw this thing up? But you've got the mediator here, which is the United States. You've got the leader of the United States in President Donald Trump, who has opened the channel of communications and who actually is moving the ball down the field in regards to this war, is actually attempting to see some sort of light at the end of the tunnel in regards to peace. And both of these leaders are simultaneously shooting themselves in the foot. You've got Putin making stupid comments about the Ukrainian government, and you've got Zelensky, who I would have assumed learned his lesson after his slapdown a couple of weeks ago, now trying to renege on parts of the mineral rights deal. And so my question this morning is, what the hell are these two guys doing? Are either of them actually interested in ending this war? Are either of them actually interested in stopping the bloodshed in their country, in their respective countries? You know, we hear all the time that this needs to end. That we hear it more from Ukraine than Russia. We don't get a lot out of the Russian president that's substantive. They're, of course, you know, state-controlled media, very close to the vest on what gets reported. But Zelensky does his media tour all the time and talks about ending this war and talks about, you know, freeing the people of Ukraine and so on and so forth. Then why are you playing around? Sign the freaking mineral rights agreement, shut up about it, and let's move forward. I don't get what either of these two guys are thinking at this point. If they're not careful, Trump is going to say, you know what? I'm trying. I've tried. You guys are uninterested. Keep fighting your war. Keep fighting your endless war and keep slaughtering all of your youth. I mean, that's what I see happening here if these two parties don't get their head out of their ass and start actually working on this thing. I mean, Trump is only going to put up with this for so long. And of course, the rest of the world who has been silent while this thing has been brewing for 3.5 years now, oh, they have nothing to bring to the table. They've got no bargaining chips that they can throw around. Nobody takes them seriously at all. And so it's only Trump. And it's obvious and evident based on what we've seen in less than 100 days versus what we saw for 3+ years under the previous guy and the rest of the world. So if the UK wants to solve this, if the European Union, now the great government organization that the EU is, the great one world government group that they are, if they want to solve this problem, have at it. But you guys have had years to work on this and nothing has happened. Nobody has done anything. The United States has been the primary funder of all of the defense in Ukraine. The United States is now the one that is trying to bring both sides together to have discussions. You guys are doing zilch. You've invested a half of what the United States is, yet this war is in your freaking backyard. And so what Putin and Zelensky are doing right now is unconscionable, seemingly. I have no freaking idea what these two guys are thinking. Zelensky should know better. He got ran out of the White House back a couple of weeks ago for acting a fool. He's seemingly starting on that again. Putin has no viable path forward besides agreeing to an eventual ceasefire and peace deal with the United States. He's acting like a moron, too. I have no idea what these guys are thinking. What one thing I do know, and one thing I am very certain of, is that the morale in both of their countries are incredibly low. One thing I do know for certain is that individuals within Russia, individuals within Ukraine, want this thing over with. They are done with this war. And they want both of their leaders to do the exact same thing. They want this to end. They want this to be done with. And if they're unwilling to do so, that's going to create, I don't know what kind of situation is going to unfold with that, but it seems like a complete and total disaster. So that's the latest that we are tracking this morning out of Europe. Both parties seemingly stumbling a little bit. We'll keep an eye on it and see what some of the details are. Presumably, we'll get some more over the next couple of days and weeks. And again, what should the end goal be? It's very simple. Get to an agreement, get to a conclusion, and end the war between Russia and Ukraine. Trump is seemingly trying to do that. Both of these leaders are just acting like idiots. And why that's taking place, I have absolutely no idea. So we'll keep an eye on the back and forth between Russia and Ukraine. Taking a look at some news stateside this morning, a major story breaking out of New Mexico over the weekend. And as you would imagine, very little media coverage of that as a fire broke out at the entrance of a Republican party in Albuquerque, New Mexico, Sunday morning. Party officials say the fire is the case of arson. The Albuquerque Fire Rescue was called in to the GOP office in Albuquerque, New Mexico at 5:56 a.m. yesterday morning with the call of a fire. Firefighters got the fire under control, fortunately, within just a couple of minutes, and they reported that the entranceway suffered severe damage, fire and smoke damage throughout the building. Now, why is there questions and discussions about arson? Well, you can see on the side of the building what was spray painted there. ICE equals KKK. That's what was spray painted on the side of the building. So you've got another example of Democrats, domestic terrorists, burning down buildings of a GOP. I mean, this is the picture. The front of this building is completely torched. Yet, this doesn't seem to be a big national news story this morning. And one of the things I always love looking at when I cover a variety of topics is how would the media coverage be from the other side? I think that helps me work through kind of the narratives and building as to how the various things are covered. If you had a Democrat Party office, a DNC office, or a local Democrat Party office that was firebombed and had the front of the building burned out by a bunch of MAGA-chanting Republicans, you can imagine how the media would react to that situation. You can imagine how the media would cover some story like this if the shoe was on the other foot. There would be continued outrage over the president's rhetoric. There would be a question last night, right? I just played you the clip of the press gaggle on Air Force One. There would be questions about how his rhetoric as the president of the United States leads into stories like that happening, leads into that sort of domestic domestic terrorism taking place, right? That's how the media would cover it. It would be the top story on CNN and MSNBC this morning. But because it is a local GOP office, because it is not a group of Republicans that are responsible, but in fact a group of unabashed, far-left progressive radicals, well, it's not even a story. And just to prove to you how this is not even a story, you can go head on over to the homepage of MSNBC this morning. Here's what's going on at MSNBC. Let's see, Elon Musk, Trump this, hypocrisy on this, how we know the unthinkable could happen in America, discussions about the FDA, nothing on here about a local GOP office being terrorized and firebombed by the progressive left. And we'll head on over to CNN's website and, exact same story. Talking about Trump tariffs, which are set to go into effect, Elon Musk and the Supreme Court, not seeing anything on here about a GOP office being firebombed. Not seeing anything on here about a New Mexico GOP office being lit on fire by a group of far-left progressive radicals. Nothing on here at all. And it's because the media doesn't have any standards. It's because the left is interested in one thing and one thing only. They are clearly interested in carrying water for their political party. That's it. They are only interested in that. They are only interested in providing news that is good for them and detrimental to the right. They're not interested in political violence, right? They always talk about this, and you'll always hear from the left, we need to ratchet down political tensions. We need to lower the temperature of our political environment. So where are they calling out the individuals that are responsible for spray painting a ICE equals KKK sign on the side of a GOP office and burning the building down? Where are they in regards to that? Right? If they're truly interested in stopping the political violence, if they're truly interested in lowering the temperature of politics, which of course they're not, They're the agitators behind all of it. So there's zero interest for them to discuss this. There's zero incentive for them to actually lower the political back and forth that's going on, because it bolsters their point, right? It gives them the outrage culture in which they can operate in. So they are complete and total hypocrites. They've got no interest in doing anything of the sort. It is political gaslighting and pandering to try and win over points with the middle of the American voting population, so that the Democrats can say, oh, we're really the ones that are trying to simmer things down. We're the ones that are trying to bring a sense of normalcy and peace back to America. But you guys are the ones that are allowing this to take place. You guys are the ones that are lending your voice, lending your platform to the far left wing of the Democrat Party that is stoking the fear in the individuals that carry out these acts. But do not let that get lost on you. It is the media organizations that are not covering this morning, that do not have this as a top story, MSNBC and CNN combined, that are the ones that are lending their platform that allows this to take place. They are complicit in the kind of rhetoric that has allowed Democrats to believe that this is an acceptable way to go forward, that believe this is an appropriate way to deal with our political disagreements. We do have, in fact, political disagreements. And the left-wing news outlets like CNN, like MSNBC, like the vast majority of the rest of the media publications across our country, they lend their platforms to these individuals. They lend their platform to allow the rhetoric of, oh, look at ICE. ICE is throwing out legal citizens. ICE is roaming around the United States like the Nazis did back in the 1930s. Right? These are the kinds of narratives that are falling out of these media outlets. And then lo and behold, what happens? Some deranged lunatic in New Mexico, which is a very, very far left progressive state. The lunatics in New Mexico go, okay, yeah, that's right. So let's go firebomb our local GOP office because they're supporting this. The media is absolutely complicit in these actions. The media are the ones that have been stoking this amount of fear and stoking these flames, no pun intended, for years now, going back almost a decade to late 2015. They have supported these narratives, have allowed these narratives to perpetrate unchecked. And lo and behold, what's the result when you tell people for a decade that the political party that's in opposition to them is a bunch of Nazis and racists? Well, it turns out those deranged folks on the left act out on that, and they try and burn a GOP office to the ground. They firebomb a local GOP office. So here's the response, a statement from the New Mexico State Republicans who responded to this, saying, quote, "We condemn all acts of political violence and domestic terrorism. The targeted firebombings on our Republican Party headquarters is disgraceful, and those responsible must be held accountable to the fullest extent of the law. Our political and legislative process must be engaged through civic discourse and respectful debate. Actions such as these further divide New Mexicans and seek to completely undermine the very foundation of how we govern ourselves. In the wake of a prominent Democrat official calling for her supporters to be agitators, it appears some unhinged supporters took that message to heart and acted out in a violent manner. Democrats must turn down the rhetoric and restore civility to our political process." And props to the Senate Republican leadership in this statement released yesterday. And it's absolutely the Democrats' fault. They are the ones that are encouraging this to take place. I mean, look at the story. Look at the situation with Tesla that's unfolding right now, where you've had dozens of videos been released just in the last couple of days of individuals that are going towards individuals' private homes, people's private properties, and destroying their cars. Going onto somebody's private property and keying their car. Why are they doing that? Why is that taking place? Well, very simple. Because the left has made it a point to now demonize somebody like Elon Musk, has decided to demonize individuals that drive an electric vehicle, specifically that one that happens to be a Tesla. And this is taking place because the left continues to propagate this narrative. The left continues to allow this narrative, to allow these messages to go forward. And so if anybody is responsible for this, it's the Democrat Party. They are allowing this to take place and they don't care because they believe it is getting to some ends of their political environment. You just scroll through Twitter. I just searched for Tesla on X. Here's some deranged lunatic lefty. It's an old white lady walking past a Tesla in a parking lot and keying the car. This is the Democrat Party. This is what you guys support. This is the messaging and the narrative that you spin out. This is the result. You guys are signing off on this. Now, I believe this is incredibly detrimental to the Democrat Party going forward. I believe this is an incredibly stupid way for them to operate. But they continue to do so. Here's another video. Houston, Texas. Same situation. Look at this jackass. He's keying up this guy's car. You guys are playing a very dangerous game right now. You guys are playing a very, very dangerous political game. You lost. Your messages suck. Your policies suck. Your narratives suck. The American people rejected that in November. The American people said, you guys are nuts. You guys are crazy, and we don't support you anymore. And so what are you doing as a result? You are ginning up a bunch of fear-mongered narratives in your supporters, in your base, to now go out and commit acts of political violence against your political opponents. This is what you are encouraging. Here's another video for you. Look at this. Typical Democrat, middle-aged white guy in sunglasses and a hat, taking a pair of pliers to somebody's private property. You know what's going to happen here? And hopefully it happens sooner rather than later. Is you're going to have an individual that shows up on somebody's private property to do this. And you're going to have a situation unfold where there is a confrontation that is made. Most of these Tesla videos that have taken place thus far, these cars are just parked in, they're just parked in a parking lot. Right? The owner is not near the car. You're going to have a confrontation take place. And unfortunately, what's going to happen is somebody's going to get shot and killed. I mean, that's where this is trending. The eventuality here is one of these deranged leftists is going to be shot and killed on somebody's front yard for going onto their private property and destroying their car. This is the game that you guys are playing. You don't think that's going to happen? I can promise you it will. As you continue to ratchet up this sort of political rhetoric, one of your deranged leftist supporters is going to get murdered and shot on somebody's front yard. They are going to get shot in a parking lot as they're defacing somebody's private property. This is how this progresses. This amount of unchecked political violence is not sustainable. You are not allowed to go and destroy people's property because you disagree with Elon Musk. You are not allowed to go and drive an ATV into somebody's car because you disagree with them politically. That's not how our system works. But this is how the left is operating. This is what the left is doing. This is the way in which they are going about to solve their political grievances. It's incredibly short-sighted. It's incredibly stupid. And somebody is going to get shot and killed. Somebody is going to die because of this. I don't hope that happens. I don't pray that that happens. I don't wish that that happens, but that's what will happen. That is the process here. This is what is going to roll out when you've got individuals that deface people's private property. when you've got individuals that decide they are going to take it upon themselves to target other people. Look at this guy, keying the car. Now, these people are too stupid to realize that all of these Teslas have cameras all over them. So all of these individuals are going to be arrested. All of these individuals should be arrested. But it just goes on and on and on. And look, all of these people fit the same narrative. I mean, they all just look like exactly the spitting definition of an out-of-control progressive leftist. Look at this guy ducking down next to his car before he draws something on this guy's Tesla. Very brave. Chad Rydenberg of Pennsylvania. I don't know what the left thinks the game plan is here. And I'm not, again, I'm not attempting to wish or will anything into existence, but somebody's going to get shot and killed. And then what's going to happen? Then you're going to have a huge violent protest take place. You're going to have riots start breaking out because some poor leftist was shot and killed, trespassing on somebody's property and destroying their car. But this is just a recipe for disaster. This is a crash course for an unmitigated disaster. And the Democrats are signing off on it. The Democrats are okay with it. They're the ones that continue to ratchet up the narrative, continue to ratchet up the pressure. This guy, guys, this is going to come back and bite you in the ass so handedly, I can't even begin to describe it. But hey, if this is your way to win midterm elections in 2028, if this is your way to go forward with winning the presidential election in 28, winning the midterms in 26, then have at it. But I don't think defacing people's private property is a good idea. I don't think that is going to lend itself generously towards your political party. Firebombing an Albuquerque GOP office and spray painting ICE equals KKK on the side of it, this is not a good idea. This is going to end very, very poorly for you guys. But the left who claims they want to stop all of this are the same ones cheering it on. The same ones that over and over again are ratcheting up the narrative that allows this to take place. I see this coming to a bloody disaster. Really, I do. Somebody is going to be severely injured or killed taking place in one of these actions. That's what's going to happen here. And then what? Then the Democrats, of course, will glad hand over what's going on. Then the Democrats will claim, oh, it's the Republicans that need to stop this, right? That's where this narrative shifts. You'll have some guy who's probably not even political, who has to defend himself, defend his private property, and it will be the Republicans' fault that some out-of-control, deranged leftist lunatic goes into their property and attempts to harm them, harm their family, right? You don't know what's going on. You've got a guy roaming around your property in the middle of the night. Who knows what's happening? It's just a disaster that the Democrats are setting themselves up for. I don't know what they are thinking or why they believe this is a good idea, but it's going to end very, very poorly for somebody. I can promise you that. I can promise you that. So a busy news weekend across the country, busy news weekend here. Coming up, I've got a very interesting interview. It's a little long, but I think it's worth going forth and listening to. Susie Wiles, the White House Chief of Staff, did a long-form sit-down with Wilmington native Laura Trump over the weekend. I've got some clips of that coming up here in just a few minutes. I want to remind you that if you would like to get access to daily show notes, including everything that we talk about on the show throughout the day, as well as bonus content, including our monthly Zoom chat that happens towards the end of each month, head on over to patreon.com/Nick Craig. That's patreon.com/Nick Craig. $5, $10 a month, a custom amount as well. And you can help support the program financially and get access to some of that bonus content. It's patreon.com/Nick Craig. Appreciate everybody and their continued support of the show. We'll get into this Susie Wiles interview coming up here in just a few minutes. You're listening to The Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X. And welcome back to The Nick Craig Show, Monday morning. Thanks for spending some time with us live, 7 a.m. on YouTube, Rumble, and X, or of course, 24/7 if you are listening to the podcast after the fact. Thanks for spending some time with us here this morning. Well, a very lengthy and really informative interview took place over the weekend, Lara Trump, of course, Wrightsville Beach native, has a new show on Fox News called My View, and I think it airs on Saturday nights on the Fox News channel. And she did a long-form sit-down with Susie Wiles, who is the White House chief of staff and ran the Trump 47 campaign. And Susie Wiles is a remarkable story. And I just wanted to play a good chunk of the interview for you this morning because I haven't really seen it all that much on social media. And it's very insightful as to how the administration is going forward and what some of those inner workings are. So I'll turn it over to Lara now. This was a really good interview over the weekend on Fox News Channel.
This is the first time I think you've ever sat down for an interview, so thank you for sitting down here with me.
First and probably only.
It seems like everything is running smoothly, and I wonder from your perspective as White House Chief of Staff, do you find that to be the case, and are you responsible for some of that?
You know, the first month we were here, everybody was so thrilled to be here, euphoric about where we were and having won the election and having the president back. Now we're into the time where it's real work. It's really long hours. It's a slog to get his agenda accomplished. I think everybody here that was in the first administration, and they're probably about half and half, brings a maturity and a perspective that they didn't have in 2016. So it's less about a person and more about a mindset and people, starting with the president, being so comfortable and so sure of what we want to do and accomplish. So it's less about anybody, me or anybody else, and more about a team that really believes in the mission and the man.
Well, let me ask you about the man, President Trump. Do you remember the first time you met him?
I do. Crazy, you know, you don't expect this from that, but a mutual friend asked me to go to New York and meet him, and I did in late 2015. He was very interested in Florida and what I thought his candidacy would look like there in 16. We had a great conversation, and then about a month later or a little bit longer, he said, I'm putting my Florida team together. Would you like to be the co-chair of Florida? Here I am.
I imagine that a successful 100 days here, first 100 days at this White House, and overall the first 2 years is going to be very impactful for the midterms and the 28 election.
We start with knowing that we have a very short time span. This 18 months is our time frame. 100 days, certainly, 6 months, a year, and 18 months are our sort of benchmark. The president came to the office knowing exactly what he wanted to do. He had 4 years to think about his agenda. And what he maybe didn't do as well as he wanted to or didn't accomplish fully in the first term. So he was ready to hit the ground running, and it was our job to try to keep up. We know.
You know, I'm going to pause it right there because this time frame, this 18 months, that is a very important number. And, you know, obviously Trump will be in office for 4 years, but this first 18 months, of which they're almost 3 months through at this point, that's really where everything has to get done. You have the House, you have the Senate, and of course, you've got the executive branch in the Oval Office with President Trump himself. And the fact that, of course, unlike the first administration where it was just kind of, oh my God, we won, now we've got to figure out how to, you know, run this thing and get everything together, this team is laser focused. They've got the time frame, they've got the benchmarks, they've got the numbers that they need, and they know how they have to move forward with it. And the fact that everybody seems to understand that, and that is kind of the northern star, the guiding light moving forward, I think proves why things have been so effective over just the, you know, 2.5 months that Trump's been in the Oval Office. Right? Because they know they've got such a condensed time frame. And he has surrounded himself with incredibly intelligent individuals like Susie Wiles, like Stephen Miller, like his cabinet, individuals like Pete Hegseth and Lee Zeldin and RFK Jr. and Tulsi and Cash and, you know, all of the various people that are involved. Everybody knows this time frame. Everybody knows what needs to get done. And they're, you know, working on that. And it's obvious each and every day with the president's, you know, this announcement and that announcement. I just got an email while that was playing from the White House, They send out their, you know, their daily email every day, daily guidance. And, you know, just as what the president's up to today, he's signing executive orders at 1 o'clock in the Oval Office. He's then signing more executive orders at 5:30 this evening. That's going to be open to the press. I mean, so everything is being worked on, and the president is full steam ahead on this. And that it's obvious that they're working under this much more compressed time frame of 18 months rather than 4 full years. More from the interview with Susie Wiles and Lara Trump.
Know where our direction is. We know, you know, we know who True North is. And every day, all day, every day, 7 days a week, that's what we're trying to get accomplished.
Well, you are the first woman to ever serve in the role of White House Chief of Staff.
Isn't that crazy?
It's crazy. I don't think most people imagine that, but
I didn't.
How does that feel?
It doesn't feel any different to me than anything else. I mean, I don't think I was the first woman to lead a Republican presidential campaign. I don't think I was. And when the president asked me to be his chief of staff, I didn't know that would be the case here. I just keep doing what I think is right, keep working as hard as I can, and it's working for me.
You know, where's the left on the party of women? I mean, no props here to Susie Wiles for being the first female chief of staff. I mean, the Biden administration, of course, made big deals about all the individuals that they surrounded themselves with that fit all of these boxes and checked all of these boxes for the left. I don't see any praise on mainstream media for the first female chief of staff. It's a very progressive of the administration, I'd say. No? This is just more nonsense from the left, right? They're all about these metrics and narratives as long as they're the ones doing it. I don't believe they would give Trump or anybody in his administration credit for anything that they do, even though it might check some of those same boxes that the left cares so much about.
Did you have any reservations about taking this position?
No. I knew how much I didn't know, and that was my concern. Can I learn it fast enough? Can I do this job well enough to be worthy of it? And I think that's what keeps you on steroids. That's what keeps you working so hard and so fast. I didn't have a reservation, but you wouldn't be human if you didn't say you didn't have a little fear.
People want to know about you, Susie. Tell us who
you
are.
I'm a mother. I'm a grandmother. I come from a place where I really believe in the country.
Now, before she continues with that, she's also the daughter of legendary sportscaster Pat Summerall. And she was born Susie Summerall, so her father was Pat Summerall.
I've, like all of us, I've evolved in my philosophy of government. My politics have evolved over time. I was, for most of my career, what we think of as an establishment Republican. Checked the box, didn't really pay much attention to what the candidate stood for, worked for whoever was sort of next in line. And then Donald Trump came along, MAGA came along. It's a whole different way of looking at the way our nation needs to move forward and grow.
What made you gravitate towards this lifestyle? Because, you know, it is fast-paced, it's cutthroat, it's very tough to survive in the world of politics.
I didn't start out life thinking I would do this, and frankly, I stayed home in Jacksonville, Florida when my kids were growing up so I could be a mom. And when they left home, a couple of people said to me, wouldn't you like to do this on some sort of a national scale? And that was about the same time that I got that call from Donald Trump. So I've been in politics and government virtually my whole life and just sort of gravitated and graduated to this over the last several years. If you are in Trump world, you are hyper competitive. You want to win. You want people to think what you think and believe what you believe and mold the country in the way you think best for us, but also for our kids and our grandkids. And so I think that's what kind of keeps me in it. That's what got me in it. That's what keeps me in it. And so I may be quietly competitive, but I'm still competitive.
Oh, I saw it throughout the course of the campaign. And I think people noted the change. There was a slight change in the president and the way he operated and the way he kind of would take a second and think through things. people gave you a lot of credit for that, Susie.
Before she gets into that, that is one of the huge things that was noted, or at least I took note of, during this last presidential campaign and even in these first couple of months compared to Trump of 2015-16 in his first couple of years in the Oval Office. The way in which there's a little bit of a pause, a break, before we just shoot from the hip. It is obvious. It is very, very obvious and evident that this administration is far more calculated than he was in 2016. And it makes sense because he's got individuals around him that are much more of that mindset. Susie Wiles and individuals like Stephen Miller are grounding the administration and frankly are probably better people to be surrounding the president than he had in the past. And this is a very, very important thing to note. And it was obvious, and I think it's obvious, it's one of the major reasons that Trump ended up winning. It was a very different candidate in the 2024 presidential election than he was in the 2016 election.
Been through so much. The lawfare, having been the leader of the free world, having had an assassination attempt, he's a different person than he was. So I really don't think that any one person changed him. I think life experience and who he is changed him. I think he's a better leader now. So I don't know that I had anything to do with that, but I think the country benefits from it.
You have very famously sort of tried to take a role out of the spotlight. You have avoided cameras. We all know that. Even the night that President Trump won the election on November 5th, he tried to call you up and you said, I don't want to go up there.
Susie likes to stay sort of in the back, let me tell you. The Ice Maiden. We call her the Ice Maiden.
You actually come from a famous background because your father, Pat Summerall, was a very famous football player, sportscaster, and you kind of lived through that growing up. So how did that impact the Susie Wiles who we see here today?
It impacted me much younger because I did press secretary work for many, many years before I came to this. It is probably a little bit easier to me because I've watched it be done all these years, my growing up years. And then even, I mean, he was a broadcaster on top of the world well into my 30s and 40s.
What do you think he'd say about Susie Wiles as chief of staff?
I was raised with two brothers who, and I'm a child of the 50s and early 60s and a little child. In those days, the girls didn't always get to do what the boys got to do, and they maybe were treated differently by their parents. I was not. Everything my brothers got, I got. I was encouraged in the same way they were. So I kind of went into the adult world, the professional world, not seeing a distinction. And so I think he'd be proud of that.
Your father actually very famously wrote about you in a book and said that it was because of a little bit of tough love from you that he was able to overcome an alcohol addiction.
Yeah.
I mean, that's remarkable to have your dad say about you.
He was a special person who late in his life had a disease. And if you're a child, an adult child, and you can't talk about that, then you need to check yourself. You need to say, why wouldn't I help? If there's something I could say or do that could change this trajectory for the better, why wouldn't I do that? And that's what I did.
Well, I think a lot of people hear a story like that and they say, well, maybe it's that little bit of kind of tough love approach that works very well with President Trump.
He probably would tell you that. I'm so lucky to have a really good sort of dynamic with him. I'm older, I'm a female, I've been doing this a long time, I've been with him long enough that we have a pretty good easy thing going. But that doesn't mean I don't wake up every single day and be a little bit on edge to make sure I keep that up and do it right every day. Because that's what he deserves, and that's what the country deserves from us.
Do you remember the toughest thing you've ever had to tell him?
2020 election. Coming to him after the 2020 election in 21 and telling him that what he thought was the circumstance wasn't, which is how I got into all this. He said, well, can you fix it? But he's such a resilient person, and he's seen so much. It's very hard to to surprise him.
This is not your first time in a White House.
Right.
You were here under Ronald Reagan.
I was, as a baby. And it's amazing what you don't appreciate as a person that young here. I remember seeing a lot that was going on. I was involved in everything. I did scheduling, but I didn't appreciate where I was. I do now. It's vastly different. And I remember those days, so I make sure the young people here get to experience all there is about working here. There's something every day, every night, and all these people working so hard should experience that. And the president wants that too.
Let me ask you about your overall goals for this White House over the next 4 years. What do you have in mind?
Right now, we're very invested and involved in a trade conversation. He's trying to settle a war. These are heady, big things that are important, not for now, but for the future. Rebuilding the American economy, getting all these criminals out of our country, peace in the world. I see my job as just sort of keeping the trains on the tracks and running on time here so that the subject matter experts, and particularly the president and the vice president, can do what they need to do to fix the country.
What a phenomenal interview there with Susie Wiles. I mean, what an incredible individual she is. You know, her last couple of comments there prior to the, you know, all the big things going on about, you know, embracing the moment while you have it, and even mentioning, you know, there's a lot of young people around me here in the White House, and making sure that they appreciate the moment that they are in, appreciate what's going on in the moment. Those are words to live by. Incredibly wise comments there from Susie Wiles. And again, she is very humble. She's not going to take credit for some of the how do we put this nicely? Some of the ways in which Trump is acting a little bit more calculated and put together than previous administrations, right? She's not going to take credit for that. She's an incredibly humble individual that is not going to claim that, oh, that's her doing. But in large part, it is. And I'm glad that Trump has got somebody like her around him. And the results of that show and shine very clear. The results of that are very obvious when you see the president dealing with issues, when you see him talking, when you see how he, you know, portrays himself day in and day out, and how this administration portrays itself. It is very obvious and very evident that somebody like Susie Wiles has an incredible part to play in all of that. So a great interview there on the Fox News Channel with Susie Wiles. May not see from her, see anything more from her again for quite some time. She's a very closed off, behind the scenes person. But I was glad that Laura Trump was able to do that and get some of those comments out there, because I think they're very, very informative and kind of shines a little bit of light onto the current administration. Well, again, heads up if you've got any afternoon and evening plans. Some severe weather expected across the Cape Fear region. Make sure you're keeping an eye on the skies. That's going to do it for a Monday edition of the Nick Craig Show. We're back with you tomorrow morning live on YouTube, Rumble, and X, and 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts. Have a great Monday.